Welcome to For the Love of Books, Bees Books Edition, a podcast by North Lanarkshire Libraries.
Hi, this is Buddy.
And this is Jenny, and we're here to talk about
Bees books. Well, hopefully we're here to talk about books, because my brain, like I was just telling you, Jenny, is completely just out of the window. It's not working today at all.
Mine's just jumped out after yours.
Oh, great. At least they have company.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, in the streets of Coach Bridge, it would be quite scary, one brain just wandering, scaring the children.
Exactly. I'm sure we'll be fine. But if we use words like unicorn instead of other words, it's because we're, you know.
It's because it's a secret code. We're a part of a secret spy agency. A unicorn is actually a very important code.
Absolutely.
That you've accidentally given away. But anyway, hopefully we're going to try and talk about the theme that Bea told us about. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Yes. Maybe not. We might start talking about unicorns. But we're going to try and talk about the theme, Silence is Golden. Mm-hmm. Question mark?
Yeah, we're not sure if there was a question. B has to be more specific.
Yeah,
I think.
And I have, so my two books are yes and no.
Oh.
So they have two, so I have put in a question mark.
Excellent.
Yeah, so my first books, The Sweetness at the Bottom of the Pie by Alan Bradley. And my second book is The Arrival by Sean Tan.
Excellent.
Yeah, so two very different kinds of books. And I have a bit of a rant coming up.
Oh, yay.
I liked both the books, but one of the books, well.
Oh, right, okay.
Well.
I'm slightly nervous what book it's going to be.
Yes.
So I have two books as well.
Excellent.
The first one is called The Cloisters.
Oh, beautiful.
By Katie Hayes. Mm-hmm. It does have a beautiful cover. Mm-hmm. And the second one, which I finished 20 minutes ago, is The Expectant Detectives by Kat Ailes. Are we saying Ailes?
Yes. We're
saying it anyway. Yes. Might not be right. Anyway, I'm interested to how your books
relate to silence.
Yes.
So, shall I do the rant?
Yes, do
first?
The rant. Oh, I'm sad it's a book I
I'm
like.
So sorry. I liked this book as well, The Sweetness at the Bottom of the Pie by Alan Bradley. It's set in 1950s England in like a country house, like where the family, so Flavia Deluce, I want to say, just like you confidently said, confidently I'm owning Deluce, lives with her two sisters. They all seem to have a very typically sisterly relationship, I say, as an only child, in that they all want to kill each other and they're just, you know, very annoyed. She's 11 and we're seeing it from her perspective. So even though it's focused on an 11-year-old, she's quite precocious. Mm-hmm. And she's a mystery solver, or she's actually a poison. She's passionate about poisons, which leads her to become a mystery solver. So it's at the start of a series which, like, you know about, because you recommended it to me. And it was really fun. I love me a precocious 11-year-old.
Absolutely.
I love mysteries. I love weird eccentric characters and weird eccentric settings. Like, she meets a lot. They live near a village. Her father is sort of absent and kind of there, kind of not there. All the characters, the setting, great. So the mystery here starts off when, you know, she's trying to sort of, like, I guess, poison one of her sisters. Or, like, just not murder poison.
Yeah,
just like
a gentle
slight poisoning. Yeah, just gentle poisoning. She has a laboratory and all where she's really into chemistry, really into science. Ticking all of my boxes. The mystery is to do with stamps. Mm-hmm. A world that I don't really know so much about. It was quite fascinating to learn about. So, again, completely love the series, and I'd read other books in the series until midway through the book. I'm way into this book, and suddenly there's this memory, like from the past coming into the future, or the present, I guess, about this magician character who, like, the father is sort of dresses up as this magician. And it gets quite racist, Jenny. It gets quite, yeah. And a lot of people don't notice this, as I have found out. But anyway, I'll tell you, as you look completely gobsmacked. Like, what racism? Are we reading the same book? So, the father is telling Flavia, like, he's sort of letting go of some secret in his past. But this is not, the racism is not the secret.
Okay.
But it's basically like when he was a schoolboy, he was a part of this magic club, mm-hmm. as you do. Mm-hmm. And he dressed up as a magician. But he dressed up as a Chinese magician. and he put on yellow makeup. Mm-hmm. He put a rubber band around his face to make his eyes look oriental, I guess. And he adopted a very offensive accent and the words. And they're all in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait. What's going on? And nothing. So this is about the narrative silence. I got right into the thing of it. So I thought in some books, they sort of use kind of racism or violence against women, violence against gay people, or, you know, sort of slurs as a way to show that this character is a bad one. And like, this is a way of her, which I don't always necessarily agree with, but at least there's a reason. In this case, the father's quite a sympathetic man. He's a bit absent from like family life and into his own sort of thing. But there isn't a point to this racism. Like, he tells this story and then it's done. And it could have just been, I was a magician. I dressed up in this fancy outfit. And I, because the magician bit has nothing to do. It's just a plot point. And I was like, oh, maybe something at the end of the story there will be. Nope. No. He was just this. And he doesn't even make a big deal out of it. It's almost like racism as set dressing. Which I was like, nobody's, like, none of the characters, nothing. So I was like, okay, it's set in 1950. Was it written in 1950? No, it was written in 2009. okay, Mr. Allen. Allen is from Canada. And I was like, is he talking about, is he, like, using English racism as this sort of, but it's not even made a big deal of. And apparently there's going to be a movie of this book, which I don't know if you'd heard of. Which I think sounds great. There's Martin Freeman is going to play this father. I can't imagine the man who played Watson and Bilbo yellow facing it up. Like, that would be outrageous.
I imagine they will cut that out.
But I can't believe it got through the book. Like, I can't believe so this man, Alan, whatever his beliefs, he's written it. The editor, the publisher, like, this is a reprint of a book. I can't believe that got through. So I went on to Goodreads, my sort of home for book reviews and rants. And I read through the reviews and nobody mentions it. Except then this one lady, she's like completely angry. And she's married to a Japanese man. And they have like sort of half Japanese, half white children. And she was so angry about it. She's like, I can't imagine giving this to my children. And she was also angry that none of the reviews mention it. So that's the kind of silence I think I was interested in, because a lot of people like you would, you know, wouldn't have noticed it. And a lot of people like her review sort of got a lot of discussion, and there were people like, yeah, I didn't notice it, thanks for pointing it out, or like, yes, I noticed it, this was outrageous. But I guess it's from what perspective you're looking at. Like, maybe me, because I am from, like, India, I guess. And I've been reading a lot about, sort of, like, as an immigrant in a country. But also just about India has its own forms of racism as well, especially against, like, people from East Asia and eastern part of the country. And so I was more attuned to it. Whereas, like, somebody else who's reading it, like, it doesn't really affect their lives, perhaps, in the same way. So they're like, yeah, like, they didn't even, they wouldn't make much of it. But I'm kind of glad that there are avenues for people to challenge this silence a little bit, because you can say what you want. Alan has said what he wants, I guess. And he probably didn't think it's a big deal. The editor didn't think it was a big deal. And it just seems so random and unnecessary, because without that bit, I would have like unabashedly recommended the book. And I'm like, why did you do this, Alan? Why did you betray me like this?
Well, so, I read it a long time ago. Uh-huh. And I think maybe because I read a lot of books set around that time. Mm-hmm. At that time, yeah, in real history, mm-hmm, that kind of thing did happen.
Yeah.
And in my head, probably, I've just felt that it was put in because that's how it would have been.
Yeah.
But you're right, it didn't need to be in the book. So,
and like, that's you're absolutely right. Like, that's what I thought as well. Oh, this is just like, you know, but I thought it would be a plot point.
Yeah.
Like, around, so that this is what happened. And this, like, you know, because I was the same. I was like, oh, it's set in the 1950s. People were more racist than I guess. And it wouldn't. But I was like, but there, first of all, there was no reason for it. Mm-hmm. And second of all, it was written in like,
yeah,
like now.
Yeah.
So you didn't need to have it for no reason. Mm-hmm. Like, I think maybe he thought it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, who is this funny for? Like, I mean, it might be funny for some people, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
maybe people from like of his age group, he's like 80 or whatever, but like there are a lot of 80-year-olds who are not racist and a lot of 80-year-old Asian people who might read this mm-hmm. book and be like, oh, Alan, mm-hmm. I think you need to get out more and meet more Asian people in the world.
I would want you to read the next book in the series, though, mm-hmm. to see if you feel that because it's the first book that he yeah. wrote mm-hmm. and he was finding his feet mm-hmm. and that maybe going forward
yeah.
he's kind of learned his lesson.
I
would like to think that.
I think
a reprint.
Exactly. Like, for me, I'm like, sure, Alan, cuddly 80-year-old Canadian man, whatever you think is like, I guess, let's not touch that. But the editor, the publisher, like, that's what I'm completely amazed by. Like, their silence, I suppose, to come back to the theme. That nobody thought, because obviously they would have been like, oh, this was set in the 1950s, I guess, so we can let it pass. But then I suppose, you know, when they're imagining an audience for their book, they're imagining a very specific kind of audience, and it's excluding others who may read this and be uncomfortable or maybe really angry, like Donna on Goodreads, who is like, what is this nonsense? Because she had a much more personal connection yeah. to it than me. Because her, like, you know, her, not even though she was white, her sort of partner, her children would be much more... I guess, affected by these caricatures and these kind of stereotypical representations. So anyway, I think I would still read the series because, like I said, and like you
everything
said,
else was good.
Literally, I love the character, I love the setting, love the mystery, love everything. Unnecessary, unchecked, uncommented on racism aside. So I guess I would recommend this to people with a giant pinch of salt. Mm-hmm. Like, read this, but I guess read it to and be sort of ready to read it a little more critically, I guess, because mm-hmm. I think books don't need to be perfect mm-hmm. and authors don't need to be perfect. Like, I have my own, like, whatever blind spots and assumptions based on things I don't know, just like Alan and his editors do. But I love that now there is more space, like this podcast, mm-hmm. like, you know, Goodreads reviews, like maybe blog posts, where people can write counter stories a little bit, like write responses to these stories. And that just, because in the reviews, there were people who hadn't noticed it and were able to notice it, like you now. So looking at it from a different perspective, I guess. So it's nice that silences can be challenged. So silence, not golden, in this is my answer. No, it's not golden. What about you? I'd love to hear about your book.
So
not rant.
Yes, I'm not going to rant. Mm-hmm. I like a good rant. And yes, I see where you're coming from mm-hmm. for that that book. But the book I chose, the first one, was called The Cloisters.
Yeah.
And basically, B gave us the topic, and yeah. I went out and seen this on the shelf. And in my head, I went, oh, monks, that'll
Ooh,
be that.
Oh, yes.
And so I thought, monks, silence, that's, yeah, I'll yeah. squeeze that in somehow. Yeah. It was not like that at all.
Oh.
No, it's yeah. not. Yeah. The Cloisters is I'm going to call it a mini museum attached to the Met in New York. Yes, I didn't know, and I had to go and Google and find out if it was real or just made yeah. up, and it's real. And basically, it's about this woman who goes to work there and how she changes and how it's an odd book. I liked it. I did like it. It's not one of these ones yeah. that I read.
Yeah. odd, like, bad.
Yes. it wasn't what I was expecting, and maybe that was a good thing.
Uh-huh. So is it set in the museum then?
So yes, so it's now, and it's in this museum, and I'm going to read a wee bit of the people who said it was great. A modern gothic masterpiece.
Oh.
Trembling with menace.
Oh no!
Sultry what? And sinister. Oh. Deliciously gothic, beautifully written. Now, I didn't read any of that before I started the book,
no,
obviously.
Good, yes, good.
Because although I sort of agree with some of that, I don't. So basically this girl, Anne, she's a bit of a fish out of water. Now, I don't know a lot about the academic world. You know a lot more about me. It didn't mean I didn't enjoy the story, mm-hmm. but sometimes I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know how this, you know, PhD would... how you would feel in that situation kind
maybe
of
maybe I
thing.
Should be reading this book.
Plus, because it's American, I don't know how different
that's
that
different,
is
to
us. Mm-hmm. But basically, she goes on like a kind of, from what I can gather, and I apologise if I'm talking nonsense, is like a kind of summer worker to enhance her offers at the end of that. And she goes to work with somebody called Rachel and a guy who I've forgotten his name. Mm-hmm. He might be called Patrick.
Or Unicorn,
yes. And basically their thing that they're doing for some kind of, again, you'll know more than me, some kind of paper that they're writing is about tarot cards.
Oh.
Exactly. Completely.
This is all. So it's like all the things you're saying about this. I'm like, wait, what is this?
Yes,
so
exactly.
I understand your description as odd.
Yes, yes. So basically they're trying to prove that tarot cards were used as what we now think of them, you know, as early as they wanted to believe they were used. That didn't really make sense. But basically they are hoping that these cards were actually used as predictive cards. In like Renaissance Italy, as opposed to what we think slightly
more modern.
You know, there's a lot about the Romans very much believed in fortune and fate, and you know, when they got into war, you know, they would pray to war god, but they would also kind of invoke Fortuna
and
you know, things like that. And they wanted to kind of show that, you know, this was a theme. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to prove this. They're trying to track down like the oldest deck of tarot cards that they can and all this kind of stuff, and it's kind of turns into a slight mystery and then a murder mystery and then it ends. As I say, I did really like it and I will definitely read something else by this author. It has a beautiful cover, but it was not what I was expecting. As I say, I was expecting from the cover and the title monks and, you know, silence and things like that. There's nothing to do with silence at all about it.
The conspiracy of silence around what is this book about?
But it's fascinating.
Oh, you've completely sold me on it.
Yes, it made me want to investigate more. So I went on and I found lots of information about the cloisters itself, their poison garden.
Oh.
So going back to your book about poisons, they have a garden to do with the cloisters is more kind of, it's old churches and things that have been demolished and bought back and rebuilt, as far as I can tell. And they've got this like medieval garden, basically, which is full of these poisons and drugs and things like that.
Mm.
And there's a hunky gardener who's kind
of course.
Yes. then this Rachel, who is like the other one in this team, she's been there for longer and she's quite rich and she's kind of, but she has a whole backstory happening as well.
Mm.
And I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm tempted to, but I'm not going to.
No, don't. Because, so I'd sort of, one of my New Year's resolutions was to read outside my comfort zone every month, like one book. This book, I don't think I would have ever picked up, like Gothic and like whatever. Museum and academia, though, I might have.
Yes.
But you've completely, this is going to be my March uncomfortable book.
Excellent.
I guess.
And at the back, there are very helpful questions about like book group questions, and then there's a wee interview with the author.
Oh, nice.
But there's also quite a detailed bit about what all the tarot cards mean.
Oh, beautiful.
So, which I didn't see until I finished the book, which I quite liked. But basically, it tells you, you know, what they mean and what.
That's really cool,
they mean if they're upside down. And I didn't know, because I think you think of tarot cards and you think of like death and you know,
but I know that death isn't supposed to be death
exactly. And all these different things, and when you're reading the book she kind of mentions certain things because she'll do a spread herself and look at them, but I hadn't realized there was things as like not mundane but the Two of Cups, you know, but actually that can mean, and especially if it's beside something else, and it was quite interesting in that
and
way.
It's just, I suppose, a way, like I'm really fascinated by how people use things. Like now astrology has gone through this renaissance among younger people, tarot as well, to make sense of their lives. Because especially if you're not like super religious and don't use religion as a way to make sense of the world, this becomes a way to kind of just figure things out.
It was interesting as well because there's a slight change from the beginning to the end in that the cards are predicting something to the cards make things happen.
Ooh,
if you see what I
yeah.
mean. You know, is it, you know, has this happened because the cards told me it would?
Uh-huh.
And if I hadn't read the cards,
I would,
it wouldn't
have
happened.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
And then you find out there's a whole other backstory happening as well, which you weren't aware of.
It sounds absolutely bonkers.
Yes.
I love it. Yes.
And I think I only laughed once. It's not a
no, gothic,
laugh
I wouldn't.
No,
I wouldn't imagine.
But, you know, there's a couple of, like, chuckles.
Yeah.
Hunky
Gardner thrown in,
yes,
into the mix.
Oh no, not everybody maybe finds him hunky. In my head, he was hunky. You know, he was putting in, like, kind of Mr. Darcy vibes for some reason. But it was not too serious as well.
Yeah.
In that, you know, you didn't chuck it around and not like it. You know, there was lots of information in it, but useful information. There wasn't anything in it like your book, which could have been taken out, and you would have known no difference.
No, it sounds really cool, and the just you've completely sold it. So I have a connection between what you said and this book a little bit, The Arrival by Sean Tan. So this is Silence is Golden, yes, because literally there are no words in this book. It's a completely wordless book. It is for children apparently, but Sean Tan, you've read some of his other books. He is a weirdon, I think. He writes books, and I think the publishers maybe decide it's for children. I don't know, maybe he decides. But I think conversations with adults would be so much more interesting. I mean, I guess kids would have their own, like, takes on it, and which would be interesting too. But they're such fantastic, like you were saying, conversation starters amongst adults. So this is just about a story of a man, name, don't know, where's he from, don't know. But he's just basically traveling to a new world.
Mm-hmm.
And his world, there seem to be like dragons. So it's like a fantastical kind of world, the shadows of dragons. We don't know what they are. And he's traveling to this new world. And in this new world, it's like just completely alien to him. The foods are alien, the people are alien, the language is alien. He's just like a sort of very much a fish out of water.
Mm-hmm.
And we're only figuring this out through pictures. Like, so we have to just...
Oh, beautiful
pictures. Yeah, beautiful pictures. So when you said your book set in a museum,
mm-hmm.
that's what, for me, reading this book felt like spending time in a museum.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the pictures, or an art gallery, I guess. Because the pictures are telling you the story, but each picture in itself is a work of art. And I think, like, when you go to a museum, like, I'm a huge museum person, or like an art gallery, you know, you can just walk through and look at all the pretty things, or you can, like, spend, which I do as well, or you can, like, choose maybe a room or like a few things that draw your attention and read, you know, the things, the cards, whatever it's called, and which places it into context and helps you see the thing in a different way,
mm-hmm.
which is what I think this book does beautifully. Because at its core, I think it's about, this is how I read it, and I think this is what a lot of the people whose words are on the back read it as well, a story of immigration,
mm-hmm.
and told from the immigrant's perspective. So it takes work, this book, because there are no words to guide you, so you have to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a rewarding form of attention, because it's seeing the world from how you would see, like, an immigrant, a person who's leaving their country, or like a refugee. I think more refugee than immigrant, is like going through their country, because I think those dragons were like war, maybe, or just like dragons who are like eating the people. And he also meets a lot of people. Lots of linguistic barriers, I say, as there's no language. But they are like, they don't understand each other. But that's the thing, like, just through his images, he's shown these really complex emotions, complex narratives. And you hear, like, or you learn about some of the other refugee experiences, and they're all different. Like, his seems like he's left his partner and child behind, and then they come along. And it shows the journey of how it goes from strange to familiar, like how it becomes from foreign to home, like a land for him, and then they show like new people around. And it's so, I guess narratively, it's not, there's not like a plot to hook yourself on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like I said, like when you said museum, that's what I felt it was like. It was just spending time with these people, with these pictures, and looking at the world from another perspective, learning to look at a world from another perspective in just like a really beautiful way. So it's, I don't know that it's like a gripping sort of like, oh, you want to know what happens next. It's not that kind of book. But I think it's just, if someone else has a resolution to read out of your comfort zone, who's listening, I would fully recommend this because, and even for kids actually, because I would be interested in hearing, seeing what kids take out of this, because I think it would be really rewarding to reread it and read it with somebody, like do a shared reading to see what different things people notice. And we have a few wordless picture books that have come in as well in our thing. And I think some adults are like, what am I going to do with a wordless picture book? Like, there are no words. Am I just supposed to look at the stories? But the pictures play such an important part in telling the story. And whichever adult is reading with the child or the child is reading by themselves could lead to a different kind of story. So I think there's so much potential in silence, and silence being golden.
Yes. Oh, lovely. Very nice. I've been looking at it as you've been talking about it there. And we have read, I can't remember what it was called.
Cicada?
Now. Yes, absolutely.
I don't know if that's how you say it.
I say cicada.
Oh, yes.
But your sign's better.
No.
That's fine.
Definitely.
And the pictures are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that book's very much, you know, 12 pages and it's one picture per page,
mm-hmm.
but there's so much in those pictures. This is a lot of pages with a lot of pictures on those pages.
Yeah.
And I love, and even with the book that you weren't that keen on, when you're looking at something visual, you're making up the story. When you're reading something, you're making up the visuals.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have both of those.
Oh, that's
if
a great
you see what
point.
I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
So somebody will read Alan Bradley and see something completely different in it because their visuals in their head are different than your visuals.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, the visuals are there, but the words are not there, so you're having to make up your own. And I love the fact that 12 different people would look at that story and there would be 12 different versions of that story.
Absolutely. And if, like, as you can see, I just wanted to show you some. So it's like a weird world full of weird, and I think like it's on purpose, like there's like weird machines, weird transport, like they travel through like these balloon type creatures, like a bit TARDIS-y, like they get into a box and there's a balloon and they, so it's all a bit strange, but
it's all very sepia as well.
Yeah.
So like in my head I have the 50s in there because he's wearing a hat, and obviously that means it's the 50s,
of course. Of course.
But you know, it's that kind of old picture type thing. So already in my head that I'm thinking that crossed with a bit of steampunk.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody else reading it or looking at it would think something else.
And you'd probably notice like different things, not just two different people, but yourself at different times.
Yes.
If you read it, you'd pick up on or focus on or read it differently and it might become a different kind of story.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. Well, I'll just quickly tell you about my other book. Mm-hmm. And there is no
silence.
Way I can make this into this. Well, I finished it like this morning and I quite enjoyed it. It's a cosy crime. It's very much a cosy crime. It's very much up your street if you like Richard Osman, you know, things like that. And basically it's, well, no, I can squeeze it in because it's about these women who are very expectant for babies. Basically, you know, they're very close to popping. And obviously, babies are very noisy, so I'm going to squeeze it in that way.
Nice, yes, silence is golden.
Yes, it is. But basically, you're seeing it from Alice's point of view, who they've just moved to this village, this English village in the Cotswolds, I think it is, to raise their child, who's due in a couple of weeks, in the countryside rather than central London, which is where her and her partner from. So they moved to this cottage. You know, she's basically 2 weeks away from popping. They're sleeping on an inflatable mattress. You know, there are boxes everywhere, this kind of thing. And they go, the only thing that they've done as grown-ups, because they don't quite think of themselves as grown-ups, is sign themselves up for an antenatal class.
Oh.
Which is being held above a shop, which is like an apothecary type shop. And they go in and the woman, Dot, is like crazy mental. I mean, she's just like, no, I mean, in a nice way, but she's like one of these really enthusiastic, like, which possibly you need when you're, you know, about to pop, but at the same time, she scares me.
Maybe that's what you need, like a good sort of a mix of enthusiasm and fear.
Yes. So it's these four women, and they're their partners, who basically all meet at this class, and then there's a murder downstairs, and they go on to kind of try and work out, basically, to solve the murder. There is a lot in it for being a cosy crime, and, you know, being quite quick to read. There's quite a lot of subplots happening and backstories and all this kind of stuff. You learn more about her partner. You learn more about other people's partners. One of them, she gets, you know, they think that she's done it, the police, and all this kind of stuff. And really, they're trying to prove that she hasn't done it. And her wife's like, you know, I know she's not done it, but the other ones are like, yeah, but we don't actually know it, so how do we know she didn't do it? Yeah. And there's just a lot happening in it. And basically, the murder happens while one of them is giving birth, because basically, at that antenatal class, she suddenly pops. And Crazy Dot, you know, is there to help with lots of towels and wind chimes and things like that.
towels and wind chimes.
And the other mums are basically like standing there watching this poor
woman is going to be us.
Birth, and it's quite horrific, I would say. And obviously, the murder happens downstairs while this is going on. Yeah. That part is very noisy. Very, very noisy.
She, the woman giving birth, wasn't the
suspect.
She's
the only one that you can say
unless that was like a disguise subterfuge. Well, was she actually pregnant?
As you can see, again, I think poison has kind of ran through her stories. It ends up he's died by not poison as such, but something that he shouldn't have had.
I love the... So, until you said they're all pregnant, I didn't realise. And now I find it really funny that the book's called The Expectant Detectives, and the tagline is, "Can you solve the mother of all murders?"
Yes. And it's like a child's mobile.
With like poison.
Poison, and custard creams. Custard creams feature quite a lot. But yes, it was just, I have squeezed it sort of into her
absolutely.
But as I say, I finished it this morning and I really enjoyed it. It was one, I like Richard Osman and things like that. It's a kind of book you can read, especially after reading maybe like a kind of more serious book like The Cloisters, that you can read quite quickly and, you know, as I say, not pay too much. You don't have to be too in-depth in it. You know, you can just read through it. But it was good. I enjoyed it and it had a nice ending. But there was, as I say, so much in it. There was a commune, and, you know, like a hippie commune. And
do you think it's going to be the start of a series?
I hope so, because at the end of it, they all become friends. The mum at first, they're all kind of, and there's only one still to pop. Like that last chapter's a month later, and there's one still to, because she was slightly less pregnant than, if that makes sense. So I can see it becoming a series you know. In this small village, and it's quite funny because there's lots of references in it to like Midsummer Murders and things like that. You know, it doesn't take itself too seriously. It's kind of you know, it's good. I really enjoyed it, and I hope she does write more.
I hope it's a series, and I hope with every, like, the title and the strapline is related to some sort, that they're all in the same stage something. That would be fun. So I think our answer to B's question, "Silence is golden?" Maybe not. Well, do you have any clues about next time?
I do. And we've had quite a long titles recently. So this one's quite short, and it is Balance.
Oh.
Just Balance.
Oh, and no room for questions.
No, exactly. Maybe an exclamation mark, I'm not quite sure. Just Balance.
Okay, I have no idea what I'm going to do.
No.
We'll find out. But in the meanwhile, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.